Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Adrian Tremaine has been involved in business development for the past 25 years. He holds a master's in entrepreneurial studies and marketing from Texas McCoom School of Business and an MBA from Pontificia Universidad Católica in Chile. A former Peace Corps volunteer in Bolivia, he was a volunteer cooperative leader of the U.S.-Cuba Working Group of the National Cooperative Business Association. Congratulations on being named the 2024 Sustainable Food Gold Award winner in the Sustainability Pioneer category. The award commemorates visionaries and trailblazers, and is well-deserved.
Well, thank you very much for those kind words.
Pachamama is America's first coffee roaster and coffee retailer to be 100% owned and governed by farmers. Adrian, what has happened over the past 20 years that has made you more confident in this business model?
I got involved about 20 years ago, shortly after a number of coffee producer leaders gotten together with this very concept to create their own business in the United States. So the great thing I think about Pachamama and looking back at 20 years is that they did something everyone said they couldn't do. Right. Everyone, believe me, we went around trying to get money from we knocked on all the doors, and a lot of people told us, crazy, you can't do this, you shouldn't do this, all this stuff. But they did it, and they own the whole thing, and they still own it all. There's so many great lessons here, and one of them is that if you're going to try to solve these very complicated problems in coffee, you have to have the long view. You're not going to solve these problems in 5 years. And in business nowadays, capitalism, as it is, you know, it's everything's on a 5 year, maybe a 7 year model. And that just isn't the way to think about it. So of course, a lot of investors didn't want to participate in Pachamama because we had a long view, and they also want ownership, which they recognize is where the power and the money is. So to the credit of these visionary producers over 20 years ago, to have this model, to build this model, and to hire me to help bring it to market, it's really revolutionary in so many ways. And they deserve all the credit for that. And I'm talking about Merlene Presa at Prode Co-op in Nicaragua, Carlos Reynoso, Manos Campesinas in Guatemala, the late Raul del Aguila from Coca in Peru. I mean, these folks and many others really, really could see that a model like Pachamama would work in coffee. And, you know, it took us a long time to do it. And one of the reasons it took a long time is because investors didn't want to invest, and we didn't really want their money. And it's ultimately about the future profits, right? You're cutting up future profits if you give them away early to outside investors. So we really grew organically with very little capital, but all the capital came from the members, which is the way it should be.
With no outside funding, the founders leveraged their crop. Let's focus on that briefly, because pulling that off is unusual. The coffee they grow in Peru or Nicaragua sells for very little at origin, but once it's roasted and packed in Sacramento, it becomes pretty valuable. The coffee beans that members donated were quite literally seed investments. So who came up with that?
Well, I think it was the model itself, I think, was really Raul del Aguila from Peru. All you have to do is look at the market and see what works. I mean, there's people making millions of dollars, billions of dollars in coffee. Right. And so we know what works. So the idea is you need to be selling a finished product closer to the consumer. And I think one with value add, you know, able to demand a premium for a branded coffee. So what's different about Pachamama is just the back end and how we kind of hard coded the business model from the beginning. So that would benefit the people that are growing the coffee.
The fact growers couldn't raise sufficient funds forced members to seek an alternative. That's when you stepped in. Self-funding works in theory, but executing a wholesale roasting, marketing, and distribution operation from scratch without much capital must be challenging.
It's a great business, and it's a great business model, and we know this is what consumers want. If you really actually look at what's important in any business, it's what the consumer is demanding. And you can see that well over 20 years ago with the emergence of fair trade movement and other movements, whereas the consumer really wants to be closer to the producer. So I don't think what we did is particularly hard. What was hard was doing it without any capital, without any cash. And so most people wouldn't have, probably in my position, wouldn't have hung around for 20 years. Okay. You know, that's the hard part. But in reality, you know, there's plenty of money in the world. So now that we've proven this can be done, I don't see why a lot of those problems can't be solved. And I will say that our members, these smallholder farmer cooperatives, invested a lot in Pachamama, and they invested coffee. And that in the early days, they were able to invest coffee. And we turned that coffee into cash and paid the bills and every year did a little more. But once we actually get some cash investment into this business, watch out. You know, this thing will take off. So we've managed to go this far without any of that. And the flip side of that is that we're 100% farmer owned. And all that equity is still in the hands of farmers. And if they want to, they've got the option to go out and sell parts of that at a high price. Because to your point, the company's worth a lot of money. There may not be an exit strategy, but it's worth a lot, and we can bank on that in other ways, and we can really get money flowing back through to the producers through higher the profits.
Let's discuss the shortfalls of a commodity-focused industry. Both tea and coffee have myopic visions. The middle guys see how they can maximize the middle. Retailers always push the merchandisers to maximize revenue at the top end. Growers waste a lot of effort competing with each other to drive down prices and reduce value. They say it's okay because, quote, we've achieved high yields and significant volume, end quote. You're not making much money if you have a significant volume and only sell your stuff for pennies. How do you shift people's mindsets from the shortfalls of commodity production to the benefits of value addition?
Well, that's a great question, and it really boils down to supply and demand, you know, and for the last 400 some years, I believe we've been encouraging producers just to grow more. And that's the solution, more, 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 more supply, that's your only way out.
Right.
But of course, it doesn't work that way because as a result, you got no profit, to your point. So when you're producing a commodity, you're powerless at on a global scale, and certainly in the case of coffee. Commodity producers are completely powerless to gain anything above really the cost of production. And a lot of times they're lucky to get that. So you have to focus on demand. You have to focus on raising the price and increasing the power of the commodity producer to be able to sell their produce for something a little more than a commodity. So that's where the investment needs to be on the demand side. And we've seen virtually no investment on the demand side from the producers because they got no profit. So how can they get there? Meanwhile, everyone over here is saying, yeah, heck yeah, I'm going to invest in this this demand because suddenly, you know, coffee goes from being just a commodity worth a couple dollars to being a luxury good worth like $20 a pound. There's very few agricultural products like that. I think coffee's one, tea to a certain extent, lesser extent, possibly cacao, but a lot of value added required there. Wine, but a lot of work in the middle required there too. Coffee, very little actual transformation of the product. The roasting process is very simple. Has to be done ideally close to the consumer in a timely manner and done well. But it's not particularly hard to do, and it doesn't even require huge amounts of capital to do it. So here you got a product that just has so much real value in it, and we can see consumers are willing to pay a lot for it. And yet the producer remains completely powerless, growing a commodity and being told by everyone, well, just grow more. But, you know, that just benefits those of us on this side of the equation is because we're going to have more power to exert over the producer when it comes time to buy the coffee. So maybe we're starting to see some of that change. And I think, you know, the markets will determine supply and demand, but we're starting to see pressure on supply. And that's going to possibly result in very high prices for coffee in the future because the consumer is willing to pay for it.
Your reply segues nicely into a discussion about the monetization of intrinsic value. Promoting coffee, quote, as more than a score, end quote, by emphasizing values such as ethical labor practices, gender equality, and soil revitalization are attributes that can help you add value at the source in the coffee lands. Will promoting coffee's intrinsic characteristics enhance its value in the eyes of consumers?
And that gets down to investing in demand and telling your story, marketing yourself, promoting your commodity as something more than that. But that's very hard for producers to do. And in fact, the people that do it are the roasters and the retailers. So that intangible value exists, but it's not going to the producers almost at all. So the real solution, if you want to get serious about it, is the producer dealing directly with the consumer and getting right to the person who values that coffee and that story and all those intangible values, get to those people directly as much as possible. So I think there's a distribution, like a logistics move here, was where you just build that bridge and go straight to those consumers and get to them because they value it the most. And then there's, you know, the longer stretch of trying to build up branding around your coffee and getting people to demand your coffee. I think the producers know their coffee's worth of much more. They don't understand how much it's worth because they're not here seeing just how much people are paying for it. And they're not paying the prices that we pay at cafes for a latte. They don't quite understand it that way, but they get it. They know that their pictures are valuable. They see more and more people coming down with cameras and videos and grabbing that story and putting it on their bag and selling it. Well, now they're starting to understand that, wow, you know, like my picture, my face is valuable. My farm, my beautiful shade grown farm is valuable. Beginning to see that, but they can't really capture it because they don't have access to the consumer in any way. And that's the fundamental, you know, the big problem in coffee, I would say, is that the big problem, and I think many people don't understand this, is that producers have no power. They have no power in this system and no ability to charge a higher price. So they're really price takers. They have to take the price that the market demands. Very rarely are they able to get a little bit more than that. And so to really fundamentally change and solve these problems, you have to address that power imbalance. And so in the big picture, we need to find ways to really truly empower farmers and get them closer to the consumer, where the value becomes exponentially more.
Produced by Atavita Studios, connect your voice to the world.